Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for July 7th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Don Ish of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, ADM is purchasing Wild Flavors, a Swiss ingredient company, for just over $3 billion. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports on Risky Business, a project looking to mitigate potential financial losses due to climate change. And we'll have the latest in agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Let's go ahead and see how futures traded on this Monday. Here are settlements in the hard red winter wheat July pit. The settlement there, 678.5, down 18.5. September at 669.75, settled down 17.5. Soft July wheat settled at 545, down 23. September, 556.75, down 22.75. July corn, 409.25, down 7.75. September, $4.50, down 9. December corn settled 406.25, down 9. July soybeans settled at 1363, down 24.75. September, 1150.25, down 16.5. November, 1125.5, down 8. July soybean meal settled at 443.70, down 3.30. August, 408.70, down $9. July soybean oil settled at 38.36, down 20. August, 38.43, down 24. August live cattle settled, well, these are last trades, 155.25, up 25. July lean hogs at 131.92.5, up 20. And those are today's settlements and last trades.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lunner's weather highlights, he says a good mix of weather is predicted for U.S. crop areas over the next 2 weeks, with no dominating ridge of high pressure predicted. U.S. Midwest temperatures will vary in the 70s and lower 80s in the north and 80s and lower 90s in the south most of this work week, and slightly warmer for a brief period during the coming weekend. Low temperatures will vary in the 60s and lower to middle 70s early this week, and then cool to the 50s and 60s Wednesday and Thursday before rebounding back to the 60s and 70s late this week and into the weekend. Rain totals over the coming week will vary from 3/10 to 1 inch most often, with local totals of 1 to 2 inches. Some of the greatest rain the first week of the outlook will be in the lower Midwest early this week. July 14th to 21st rain totals in the U.S. Midwest may vary from 4/10 to 1.25 inches and local totals to 1.5 inches.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Don Ish of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, as soon as the markets opened last night, futures were under pressure, and they remained under pressure all the way to the closing bell today.
Looked like we had a price robber on the run, didn't it, when those markets
sure
opened?
Did.
You know, it looks to me like the in the case of the soybeans, the head and shoulders top that you saw in the November contract, really vivid over there, really did its thing here. It was almost what we classify as a classic pattern. You don't see that very often, in that the right shoulder wasn't quite as high as the left shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, when the technicians see that, and especially the traditional funds, the guys that can go either way, you know, and they work their fund programs just like that, and they go with them. It's kind of like dominoes falling into each other because they run one stop into another. And, of course, traditional funds can be long or short, whereas the index funds can only be long as they have to replicate some kind of an index. So it was interesting to see that how that technical side of the market reached up there to those fund-driven prices on the board.
Well, we did have a gap off of the opening bell last night in that November soybean contract, and it actually worked its way down all the way to 11.16 as a low in the last trading period, and then it kind of tried to fill the gap some. It did fill the gap a little bit today, but we're going to keep an eye on that gap for the balance of this week heading into Friday WASDE report day, I think.
Oh, I think that's very true. The other thing, I think, Dave, that I like to look at over the years is that when you have a move-ending pattern, that's what you have to classify what we've just had here in last week is a move-ending pattern, in that you have broken lower and harder than you have in any other time going before this within that contract's life. And so that qualifies as a move-ending pattern. So producers who haven't got all the hedging done they wanted to do, you know, they ask themselves, well, now, how much of a rally back can I anticipate to get something done? And my rule of thumb is that the most you can expect coming back up is something that'd be halfway. And when I spoke earlier this morning with you folks, I hadn't crunched the numbers yet, but I have them here now. And in the case of December corn, halfway back up would be 430.5. Now, that sounds like a long ways up when you realize we went out at 406.25.
Right.
And like I say, that's the maximum you can look for, because if you go past that, then you open the door to go back to the highs. So it would take some kind of a catalyst a whole lot stronger than what we've seen so far to put that kind of money in the bank. That same number in November beans is 1181. So, but 1181 is really kind of a minor halfway back. The major halfway back, if you want to go back to that 1279 high we made back May 22nd, would take you all the way back just under $12, 1197.5. Now, I don't see anything on the horizon that's going to give you those kind of rallies. It's just kind of good to have those in your hip pocket in case some catalyst does pop up here and, you know, give everybody a surprise and boom. You know how these markets can like to be rocket movers. They can really go.
If we get a very bearish WASDE report on Friday, I suppose that we might even put the lows from the year down there in January in the sights of soybeans.
Well, we sure could. You know, the trade is already talking about, you know, corn prices have gotten down to four-year lows. July took out the January low at 408. September futures actually dropped under $4 into that 397 area there a bit. So, and that's the first time we've seen Board of Trade corn futures trade below $4 since August of 2010. And some of the analysts seem to think the next target for Dease corn could be down at that 390 level, you know, with a slow grind possibly all the way down maybe to 360, 375 into the throes of harvest. You know, and you've seen some profit-taking in these bull spreads, July-November bean spreads, August-November bean spreads. Those have been kind of coming apart here. So certainly we've seen a lot of bearish action in here that would make you want to, you know, want to get all the rest of the sales done on any kind of bounce if you can do it.
And certainly the impetus for this move was last Friday's acreage report, as well as the crop production and quarterly grain stock report. But on top of that, We just have to talk about weather, and the weather looks to be very good for the next 10 to 14 days. A lot of the corn is due to pollinate in that period.
Yes, it is, and we're going to have real favorable temperatures for that going forward here based on what we're seeing out over the next 6 to 10 days going forward here. There'll be a lot of corn pollinating at that time. And if you notice, not only do we have plenty of moisture, we've got, comparatively speaking, cooler temperatures too.
So have producers that you work with, have they made a lot of sales up to now or no?
Well, yes. By and large, I would say yes, especially the larger producers who really have a whole lot more at stake than, you know, your marginal producers who maybe are grain and livestock. But your real big grain producers have done a lot of them. Some of them have even done some hedging into the next year in 2015 back there. We didn't get the highs. We don't ever, you know, portray being able to do that. But we kind of think we might have got our hunk out of the middle, and we'll just see how we go from here. But, yeah, I think your grain producers are pretty well covered.
So I suppose the question is that will those smaller producers need to really have to sit on the crop for quite a while in order to squeeze out a profit at this point?
I think that's right, if the banker will let them.
Yeah.
You know, that's another task going forward.
Okay, so I guess I have to though say if you look at the in the entirety of the market today, that corn, even though we had some losses there, held up pretty well in the face of soybeans and wheat.
You're not kidding. You know, wheat had kind of a strong showing last week, while the corn and beans were reacting more to the downside. But then, you know, the wheat kind of found itself on the downside here too now, and you're just getting a general liquidation. And you get to the point where you have what we call a GMO. It's at the end of the day, it's get me out.
Mm.
You know, they got margin calls to meet. And you can kind of see that unfolding about 12:15 to 12:30 a lot of times, when I'm sure margin clerks will be on the phone saying, hey, you know, where's this money in here? And so you get liquidation kind of following it up into the tail end of the market.
Meanwhile, if you looked at livestock side, you just see these historic numbers and you just shake your head and say, wow.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah. I said a long time ago when I was talking to my high school graduating class, you give us $100 beef and an American farmer will bury you in beef. Well, boy, you don't have to go far for that now.
Yeah. And so is there much more upside in the feeder cattle contract?
I don't think there's a whole lot more, but you're not looking at a lot of downside. I think we got to see more of a sideways, choppy action in here. And as far as grinding out higher prices, it would be more beneficial if we could trade a little bit sideways over in those feeders. But with corn, you know, and the grain prices coming down here, it's hard to get the feeder cattle guy bearish now.
Thank you, Don.
Uh-huh.
That's Don Ish of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
In agricultural news, agribusiness giant ADM will pay about $3.13 billion to buy the privately held Swiss company Wild Flavors, which supplies natural ingredients to the food and beverage industry. Wild Flavors sells full flavor and ingredient products, as well as fruit juice concentrates and ingredients like natural flavors and extracts. It has production sites in Europe, the United States, Asia, and South America. The deal is expected to close by the end of the year. The chief of the International Monetary Fund predicts that the global economy will improve over the next 18 months, but says that growth might not be as fast as previously expected. The IMF says that investment remains weak and that the recovery in the U.S. hinges on the ability of the Federal Reserve to gradually reduce stimulus measures and on political leaders agreeing to a fiscal plan. The IMF is expected to refresh its economic forecasts this month. In April, it predicted global growth of 3.6% this year and 3.9% in 2015. A federal court in Washington has dismissed a lawsuit brought by four Iowa residents who wanted the Environmental Protection Agency to regulate air emissions from concentrated animal feeding operations. The plaintiffs were concerned about emissions from a hog feeding operation near an elementary school. A new study from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service points to agricultural conversion as the chief reason wetlands and grasslands have been lost in the prairie pothole regions of North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Minnesota. According to Status and Trends of Prairie Wetlands in the U.S. from 1997 to 2009, the U.S. FWS says agriculture accounted for 95% of wetland area lost during the period. The study said farmed wetlands declined by an estimated 45,310 acres between 1997 and 2009. Commercial bankers have rekindled their long fight against the Farm Credit System, arguing that the government-sponsored entity damages them. They say it undercuts loan rates to attract away their most profitable customers, and that the FCS is seeking to expand its lending authority beyond farm borrowers. The statement came in the form of a plea from the Independent Community Bankers of America, urging Congress to oppose Farm Credit System efforts to expand its portfolio and make non-farm loans. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. A group of business people and political leaders have released a project called Risky Business. Todd Gleason has more on the study and how it might be used in the Midwest to assess and mitigate the financial risk associated with climate change.
Risky Business, the study, assesses ways to manage the financial impact of climate change through the end of the century. The study does not propose ways to mitigate the problem. However, it does offer its data to anyone wanting to assess the financial risk of things like rising sea levels and the impact of flooding on coastal properties, real estate, homes, businesses, whole cities, or of drier growing seasons in the Corn Belt. One of the Risky Business Study members is the executive chairman of the global agricultural giant Cargill, Greg Page.
It is a business-oriented study that was sponsored and paid for by Hank Paulson, the former Secretary of the Treasury, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York, and Tom Steyer, who is a retired investor from California. And they had seen a lot of studies around this issue of what kind of weather and what kind of climate are we going to face as we go forward. And most of them have written more from a scientific and meteorological standpoint, and they wanted to take the same tools that they'd all used in their business lives, and Hank had been CEO of Goldman Sachs in the past, and use the principles of risk measurement and assessment that are used in looking at financial and investing risks and apply it to this issue.
The study does not provide solutions to the inherent financial risk of the Earth's warming, but rather an enormous data set, free to anyone who wants to use it. The data provides geographically specific climate change information.
And so I think one of the real wise things they did, use business principles, use the risk tools that are used in a host of other kinds of risk assessment exercises, and to have their work not start with a prescription of telling the world what to do about it or how to act, but rather how to think about it and how to put it into common business terms for use in making real-life decisions.
Decisions, says Page, that can take place in a business environment regardless of one's beliefs about climate change, the kind of conversations he thinks that are not taking place for fear the mention might prompt unwanted government involvement.
And so I think we have to get past that in our conversations up and down the supply chain to make sure that as we make decisions about where to put a facility, or as the Burlington Northern decides at what elevation to put in a new set of double tracks that are going to be important to us that they take into account. What if the 100-year flood rainfall 10 years or 20 years forward from now, when those assets will still be important to agriculture, what small cost might we invest today to make sure we have a more resilient system later if, as risk works, we end up with a harsher environment than we would have expected?
Greg Page is the chairman of the board for Cargill and a member of Risky Business, a study on the economic risk of climate change in the United States. You may learn more about the Risky Business study on the web. The address is riskybusiness.org. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Brian Stark of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Brian.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I want to start with your pollination report. Where are we in Champaign County to the best of your estimation?
Well, I think right now you're starting to see a bunch of tassels that are shooting, and we probably will start to see some pollination occurring here in the next week to 10 days. I was just reminiscing with another customer here earlier today, and some analysts believe, and I guess we'd include ourselves in that we might be, as of Corn Belt, 50% pollinated by the 17th to 20th of July. And, you know, with the benign forecast we see out there currently, cooler temps, regular rainfall, it's going to be hard once you get over that hump of 50% pollinated to really do significant damage to the corn crop.
The trading might be a little bit ahead of itself with those kind of numbers, but certainly you have to say that 14 plus billion bushels of corn is a possibility.
It certainly is. I still think that there's some unknowns out there. I think the crop is setting itself up to be one of the biggest we've seen probably since 1994. From an estimation standpoint, conditions look great. But at the same time, we'll be wondering until the October S&D report, when the FSA acreage data is merged with the risk management agency's data, to really certify and figure out, did we plant the 91.6 million acres of corn? And I think those are some questions, but irregardless of whether we lose a few more acres of corn, the crop is still going to be massive.
Yeah, there's a few spots that, you know, you hear complaints about yellowing of stalks in certain areas, some hail damage, but it's really localized.
It is, and I think that's the key word right there is local. I think a lot of the times it's easy to look out our back door and say, you know, we've got some issues, and unfortunately you feel for the producers that are struggling with overwet conditions, but from an overall perspective, the Corn Belt looks good, and the reason they're called local is because they are local, and in the grand scheme of things, unfortunately, they're not going to impact the market enough for them to want to push prices higher.
Very quickly, can basis help futures going into harvest?
I think at this stage of the game, if you've got a massive corn crop, I think it's going to be very hard to get the end user to pay up. They see that coming. If they've got enough coverage, and it feels like with the quarterly stocks number, we've got enough coverage to get to new crop, I don't anticipate many early premiums. And until the producer shuts his bin at the end of October or November, I think that's when you might see your typical basis appreciation. But for now, I think the basis market's going to be flat.
Okay, then why don't you go ahead and tell us what your prices are today?
Cash price for corn is $4. New crop out of the field October, November is $3.81. Cash soybeans, $13.38. New crop October, November, $11.05 cash. And our new crop wheat cash bid right now is $5.42 tonight.
All right. Thank you much, Brian.
Thank you, Dave.
That's Brian Stark, and he is with the Andersons out of Champaign, Illinois. It's Macaroni Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1568, William Turner died, an English naturalist and botanist. Turner is known as the father of English botany. In 1752, Joseph Marie Jacquard was born, a French silk weaver. He is the inventor of the Jacquard programmable power loom. The machine was controlled by perforated control cards and was the basis for the modern automatic loom. In 1862, the first land grant act was passed. Public lands were sold for agricultural education. This was the start of many state universities throughout the United States, including right here at the University of Illinois. In 1928, Otto Frederick Rottweiler perfected the bread slicing machine that he began work on in 1912. The first piece of sliced bread was produced and sold at M.F. Bench's Chillicothe Baking Company on Elm Street in Chillicothe, Missouri. And in 1936, Henry F. Phillips patented the Phillips head screw and screwdriver. By the way, General Motors was convinced to use the screws on its 1936 Cadillac. And by 1940, virtually every American automaker had switched to Phillips screws. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is Mark Russo, and he is with Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mark.
Hey, good afternoon, Dave.
Well, can the weather be any more ideal? I suppose you could quibble a little bit about precipitation totals localized, but generally speaking, across the eastern Corn Belt, it's pretty good, isn't it?
It certainly is, Dave, and it looks like it's going to stay that way as we go through at least the next couple weeks. And for all practical purposes here, from now through almost the end of the month, favorable weather will continue. We are going to see temperatures actually after today begin to trend cooler than normal and be by a slightly cooler than normal, but nothing extreme from now till approximately July 20th, 21st. And along with that will be some precipitation at times, but actually the pattern is beginning to turn less active, which for numerous parts of the Corn Belt, especially the Northwest, that's actually a beneficial situation after the heavy rainfall here of late.
And we don't talk about nighttime temperatures enough, but they're really going to be good, too.
Yeah, you're going to see that cooler bias both with daytime maximum temperatures and nighttime minimum temperatures coming up here. For example, in as we go through this week, we will see minimum temperatures here by Thursday and on into Friday mornings dropping into the 50s across some portions here of central Illinois, and generally 50s and 60s across much of the Corn Belt, and it looks to stay that way into next week as well.
What about the second week of the forecast?
Well, again, just a continued cooler bias, especially starting out next week with likely readings and returning to more kind of normal levels by the end of next week. And again, from a precipitation standpoint, it looks like week two will feature kind of a near normal rainfall pattern across the Corn Belt.
Okay, let's look at the Western Corn Belt a little bit. I get the idea that it's not quite as ideal. Is that right?
Well, even for there, it's shaping up to be, considering that the pattern is turning less active, and you're going to be ending some heat here. Granted, areas such as Nebraska will have a couple more days versus parts of the central and eastern Corn Belt, like here in Illinois, on into Indiana, Ohio. But even there, temperatures, only talking about duration, days of heat will be short, and in fact, temperatures by later on this week will trend cooler than normal and stay that way into next week.
And just a moment or two on the far west and the drought and dryness there, anything to improve that or not soon?
Well, you're seeing here in areas of the southwest actually an uptick in monsoon rain activity, and this is the time of year with the onset of the southwest U.S. monsoon, and we're beginning to see some activity in portions of Arizona, California. It's still going to take a long time for the drought specifically in those areas to be made up. But, you know, further to the east in areas of the plains, which up until the past month actually had continuation of dry conditions, it's almost been a turnaround as they've been downright wet over the past 3 to 4 weeks.
Thank you very much, Mark.
You're welcome, Dave.
That's Mark Russo of Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report.